We have a special guest today, Brad Dacus from Pacific Justice Institute. Welcome to Guess What I Heard, Brad.
Thank you so much. It's great to be on the program.
We're glad you're here. You just came off a busy night having a town hall meeting last night. Is that right, here in Bakersfield?
That's right. And then this morning I spoke to a prayer breakfast up in Visalia. And then I attended part of the prayer rally at the Kern County Courthouse, Liberty Bell.
Yeah.
And this evening I'm going to be speaking in Delano to a prayer dinner. And then tomorrow meeting again with a group of leaders here in Bakersfield. So
that's great. That's great. Yeah. We know who you are, Pacific Justice Institute, and what you're all about. But could you maybe tell our audience how PJI got started and what brought you into that whole thing?
Yeah, and maybe why, you started it.
Yes, thank you. Well, yeah, it was interesting. I interned with an organization back east called Rutherford, and I love what they did. This was after my first year of law school, defending religious freedom, parents' rights, sanctity of life. I thought, oh, this is my dream. Maybe, you know, 30 years from now, when I'm actually qualified to really do this work, this is my dream. This is what I want to do. And then I'm out of law school, working for a firm in Sacramento. I get a call, and the founder, John Whitehead, says, Brad, how would you like to open an office for us on the West Coast and coordinate litigation in 14 Western states? And then he said, Brad, are you there? Brad? And I said, yeah, I'm here. So it's like, you know, someone says, we want you to be the head commander of the military and, right, and invade China.
I mean, it's your kind of dream job at the same time, too.
Yeah. Right?
Big,
huge. But it's like a mega, you know, skipping and, you know, 30 years worth of prep in my mind that was going to be needed. But I prayed about it and I just realized it's not about me. It's all about trusting in the Lord and what he wants to do. So I said yes, and I made it really clear to the Lord, this is not a mountain, this is not a molehill, this is a mountain, and you're going to have to move it, just so long as we have everything clear. That's what I said in my prayer. So I said yes. After 5 years on the West Coast, we developed a network of attorneys all throughout the West. I drove to little tiny towns all over everywhere, Fairbanks, Alaska, you name it. I was there recruiting attorneys, developing this network. And then after 5 years, everything was finally really smooth, you know, in sync. I was coordinating 40% of their litigation for the organization. And then I get a call and from John Whitehead saying, Brad, we're having to shut down your office. We're having to scale back, but we don't want to lose you. I want to give you a promotion. I want you to head up our public affairs office in Washington, D.C. You'll be the media appointment for all of our cases, all of our litigation across the country, radio, television. You'll testify on our behalf before Congress and legislation. You have a higher salary, larger office, larger staff, right there in the nation's capital. It'll be the face of the organization. Of course I said yes, right? I mean, who's going to say no to that, right?
Right, that big buildup, of course.
Of course you say yes. I don't have to pray about this. Yeah. And then I had insomnia that night. And then I just brushed it aside. Insomnia the next night. I realized, oh, shoot, I got to pray. And I didn't want to pray. I'm just being just raw here. I just didn't want to pray because when I pray, I'm always challenged to do the thing requiring faith and not the easy way. That just seems how things work for me when I pray. So I prayed, though, and I felt convicted that God wanted me to follow the passions of my heart. And that was to make sure people got the help they needed the most in the country, which is here on the West Coast. And there was going to be a huge void in the West when that office I was running was shutting down. We were handling over 90% of all the case matters on the West Coast, dealing with religious freedom, parents' rights, sanctity of life. And I knew that. And so the bell tolled. And so I said, okay, all right, God, I'll do it. I will go forward. I'll start an organization. I'll keep the work out here going on several conditions. So I just had a few little conditions, free office space in Sacramento, indefinitely, definite free office space, free computer system. Keep me on the radio stations for free. There were two at the time. We have to be in the Black God in just 3 months, and I'm never going to charge anyone for any work I ever do. I thought it was very reasonable with my ultimatum, if you will.
Your stipulations.
Or fleece, if you want to be, you know, right, biblical term. Right. You know, that's the only way I can justify it is that one Gideon example. So I'm sort of stretching. But the good news is God came through on all of it. fast forward, that was 1997. And now we have offices in 30 states, coast to coast, donated office space. All of it's donated office space. Does it work for the first? I think it worked for the second, the third. And that's just how I'm wired, and God knows that. And then the second was the media. So now I have a radio show called The Dacus Report, heard on over 800 radio outlets across the country. We don't pay for it. Then we also have The Legal Edge, a commentary Monday through Friday, over 1,000 radio outlets. We don't pay for that. We have a TV program on his channel called Brad Dacus Live, Monday through Thursday, an hour-long show. I pre-recorded Thursday so I could be here. So
thank you.
If you're wondering how I'm going to do that, that's how I did it.
And I thought you were 24/7.
I split myself in half. So then we have a new show called Faith and Law, and it's on 32 networks. We don't pay for any airtime for any of these shows, and it's all grace. And so it gets out there. The more airtime we have, the more people calling for help. And what makes us so unique at Pacific Justice Institute, among other things, is that we don't just cherry pick a few high profile cases. Our goal is to make sure that everyone gets help, that no one is left on the side of the road. That's our hallmark at PJI. And so if anyone is out there, they need assistance dealing with religious freedom, parents' rights against the government, the sanctity of human life, they should never hesitate to contact us, because that's what we do. We have over 220 cases right now in active litigation. Some of those are class action lawsuits. One of my favorite is a major class action lawsuit against my favorite city to sue, San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And, so we get involved and we take on these cases, and it's a real joy. So that's the story. And it's all by God's grace. It's not because I'm, I have arrived to my perfection. And my wife will tell you my halo is still really crooked. But we have a gracious God, a merciful Lord who takes us where we are. And by the grace of God through Christ, he uses us. And so it's just a real honor and privilege to be a part of what God wanted to take place.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. Love that.
And I want you to know, as an attorney, most of what I said was true, too. It's a lawyer joke.
I was at your town hall last night. Patty was watching it on streaming. So we're both aware of what was going on last night here in Bakersfield. We saw you at Dominion Church here local, and a couple pastors were there on a panel with you, as well as another one of your attorneys from Idaho. Is that right?
Right. She flew in. Catherine did a great job.
Yeah.
Fantastic litigator, and involved in a number of cases there in Idaho on behalf of Pacific Justice Institute. And we're just so happy to have her a part of our team.
See, and that was surprising to me, because Idaho is like the place Californians go to get away from all the crazy California politics.
I know.
And to actually have an office there where you're needed was both surprising and a little disappointing.
Yeah, and Boise, it's a little piece of California. I mean, the actual downtown Boise, that area is blue. Mm-hmm. And ugly blue, in my opinion. We opened offices, not because I would just want to have offices everywhere, because my preference is to not have to have offices, because it's more to manage. But we open offices when the cases justify the need to open an office. It's more cost effective just to open an office and have an attorney than to keep flying in and out.
Yeah.
And that's why we open our offices. So every one of our offices are there because there was a need for us to have an office, and we have the cases. She's doing just a fantastic job.
Well, Governor Newsom has been going around all the different red states trying to promote California policies in other states, and he's gone to Idaho quite a few times. So it's almost like you're trying to circumvent some of the things that he's trying to push there as well as other Dems, just by having a presence.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And that's the main thing, is stepping up to the bully. I mean, bullies, generally speaking, I remember, watching this episode of Andy Griffith, and little Opie was dealing with his friends, and they're all caving into this bully. And his dad, the sheriff said, son, sometimes all you have to do is just step in the ring to challenge a bully, and they usually back off. And little Opie stood up to that bully, and And the guy says, yeah, I guess I don't want to get my hands dirty. I, you know, this is my nice clothes. And it was it's something, it's funny, little episodes like that make great pictures for us in real life,
right.
in that we just need to stand up to these bullies.
Right.
And
right.
by having these offices and these attorneys, we can get them back down. My goal is for there to be no place in America for Satan to go for vacation.
Absolutely.
Anywhere. Absolutely. No school board, no city council, no county board, whatever. Should it be immune from public responsibility and accountability and the Constitution of the United States?
And I think that's one of the main topics that came up last night is what's going on in our school boards right now.
Right.
Because we had Mary Little, or you had Mary Little there,
yeah.
who sits on the Kern County Board of Education.
Yeah.
And she was in the battle by herself with four other liberal trustees for quite a while until another conservative got elected in 2022, Lori Cisneros. So now the two of them are trying to put before the Board of Trustees, actually May 14th, they're going to have a vote on getting a written policy, excuse me, a written policy for what supplemental material can be put in the classrooms. Because I guess they were saying that during COVID, a lot of the libraries in the school shut down, and it was more teachers bringing in their own classroom libraries, and so
right.
a lot of inappropriate books were coming
right.
in. And now they're trying to have a written policy that determines what those books can be.
Right.
But they're getting a lot of pushback. So, what would you recommend in a situation like that? How can they put a case together that says we really need it in writing what we can allow?
Yeah, and it's really hard to put that together because you don't want to be too broad, so to the extent that you're not only keeping out material that's educational and relevant, but also you don't want to be so broad that it can be vulnerable for a challenge and an attack. So that's one problem. I know in one community up in Santa Rosa, we were suing them a number of years ago, and they were in a really difficult situation, a real pickle, because the material that they exposed children to was just sick and outrageous. So we filed a lawsuit, and part of our settlement was for them to agree to allow a parental review committee to review any and all materials, presentations from the outside, or books from the outside, or you know, things like that. Things that go in the library, they have to be approved by the parental review committee. And members of the parental review committee would not be allowed to be employed by the school district or be the spouse of someone employed by the school district to make sure that there was a complete distance from the interests of the school and its staff and those of the parents of that community. They adopted it, and in fact, it happened in Santa Rosa. I think it happened just about anywhere. Now, they just adopted it as a condition for our settlement. So, because we litigated. Litigation can be a very effective
right.
tool in getting policies adopted. And I have to admit, it was a smart move on their part, too, because, you know, we could have hit them with all kinds of attorney fees. So when we went and said, you know what, I tell you what, how about we forego attorney fees on this point, and instead you, if you agree to do X, Y, and Z, and they're like, oh, we'll agree to that. How much money are you going to save us? Okay, we'll do that.
Yeah.
So we
well, short of suing the district, how can a regular school board or parents within the school district get something like that done?
Well, if you have a school board that is parent friendly and respects parents and is for the welfare of children and not some outside radical leftist interest agenda, like the teacher union it happens to be.
Right.
But if you have one that's a true school board, putting kids first, putting parents first, then they'll be open to this. And we can work with them to adopt policies like that. Now, we've got a governor who's continually tightening the noose against school boards and their ability to be reflective of the community, reflective of the parents, in terms of policies, in terms of curriculum. So this is something that we have to scrutinize and examine and re-examine as a matter of policy and procedure. Moving forward, we'd be happy to work with any school district wanting to address this that has a majority that want to be responsible and are not just mere puppets of the teachers union
right.
and their radical leftist, sick, demented agenda and curriculum.
That's
So I think what Linda's sort of alluding to is that in earlier podcast, we had addressed our local, one of our local school boards. We had information that they were allowing like really awful books into the schools. And we've done some research on that, and we're trying to figure out, you know, where those books are. We think there might be, the information that I got after speaking with one trustee is that they may be or are in the high schools, but they're not in the lower grades. But at the same time, I mean, they're cartoon depictions of boys, you know, doing things to each other that are maybe outside of what children should be reading about, you know, in a school.
And so what's interesting is that this material has sexual acts that are things that are not natural, things that a married couple could be married for 50 years and never been exposed to, never seen this, never even thought of it or imagined it. And yet they're putting these thoughts in our young people in their minds. When you put that in their mind, that is very dangerous because then it opens the door. Kids that are now deciding to distort their gender and determine to have gender confusion, and they want to distort their gender in hideous ways. The overwhelming majority, if you to question them, and they've been asked this question, they say, well, if you were never exposed to the concept of changing your gender, think you'd have this dysphoria?
Yeah, would you have even thought about it?
And you know what they say? They say, no. I saw it on the YouTube. I saw it on the internet, and I saw this person, Mr. Star, Miss da 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 da. So it's planting the ideas, which we know are harmful, resulting in statistically harmful results. And if we cared about kids, we wouldn't have this garbage in our schools. One thing I do recommend for parents, and I've seen this happen, we've started recommending this years ago. And that's for parents, when they see something in the library, to check it out, have their child check it out, go to the school board meeting, and in a little time to start reading from that portion that is so outrageous. And the school board usually says, excuse me, that is not appropriate here. That is not, I will not say thank you for agreeing with me. It's in your library with the kids. And if it's not good enough for here, then it's not good enough for the kids. And I want to know what you're going to do to get this removed from our library, from our curriculum.
Right.
I think it's a very effective way to go. Another is perhaps...
Can I just interrupt you there? That actually backfired us, because we had a parent for the school board who was reading it, and they doubled down. They said that some kids are going through this type of confusion and experience, and to read about it helps them identify that they're not the only ones who are struggling with it. And they doubled down on any kind of a book like that that talked about homosexuality.
These are school board members?
Yes.
Kern County?
Yes.
Or Bakersfield?
Kern County. It was the Kern County Superintendent of Schools who said that.
Do you know what's his name?
It wasn't the actual superintendent. I'm sorry. It's one of the trustees on the board.
At a meeting.
Yeah, at a meeting.
That's disgusting.
They doubled down. And she even said, she goes, well, you know, there's books like Precious that were made into movies, and those are appropriate for parents to take their kids to see when they're struggling with something like that.
Well, when they're struggling with something like that, that means the child needs counseling.
Right.
To understand the underlying causation. We know for a fact it is not biological. It is not genetic.
Right.
That's a fact. So hence, it is environmental and experiential. So what environmental factors are contributing? What experiential factors? I'll go and answer the question. Studies show that the number one correlative of children having gender identity struggles and confusion, number one, is children who were sexually abused. Number one. Oftentimes, number two is a lack of peer-to-peer bonding, which deals with, you know, am I really a boy? And often it's or really a girl, or it could be a conditional relationship with their family. So if a father didn't have a boy, and the girl, in order to get attention, has to go hunting, has to do sports, has to do boy things, and she's not affirmed in her femininity, that's also a problem. Or a girl that was sexually abused, that can be very, very difficult. Or a boy sexually abused. And as you, if you look at the information out there, this isn't speculation. this is common understanding of it. And yet our society wants to turn off our brains, turn off science, turn off psychology, turn off statistics, and let our children be sacrificed on this altar of dogma and ideology that is not supported by truth and knowledge.
Right. And that's why this May 14th vote that they're going to be doing, it's going to be important, because they were voting on this at that meeting. And after listening to her talk and then hearing parents speak, and it went kind of back and forth, then the board took a vote, and it was 2-3 to not have a written policy. So the two trustees who wanted it asked if it could be reviewed again. So May 14th, they're going to have an expert witness come in and give a presentation about how it's harmful for kids to actually read that if they have experienced some kind of abuse, because it makes them relive it. And there's no one there to counsel them about it. They're just reading it on their own.
Right. The counseling that they get in public schools in California is so dangerous, because what they're instructed to do is to affirm it, to encourage it. Not to resolve it, look at the underlying issues to give them the counseling that they need. No, they become a part of the problem. That's one reason why the state of Texas actually went in the right direction. We pushed legislation to bring in school chaplains. And the only three of the people that testified against it were the LGBTQ radicals. One of them was a biological man dressed up like a woman. And he testified, he says, look, this is for the state Senate in Texas. And I was there. I was testifying in favor of this chaplain bill. He goes, this is a bad bill because kids need people like me, you know, who've been trained, who are expert counselors, to direct them and to guide them, not people like these uneducated school chaplains. And I looked at the faces of those Texas state senators, and their faces were like, their eyes got big and went, I just know what they're thinking. Oh, shoot, we've got to pass this law immediately to get competent, loving, constructive help for these kids. And that's what they did. They passed it. And now there's bills in 17 states to bring in school chaplains. I think that's a move in the positive direction for those kids who, for whatever reason, are still bound by public education and are not able to experience private schools, homeschooling, or homeschool co-ops, which we're encouraging to be started in churches and synagogues across the country. Homeschool co-ops.
Except here in California, I would doubt very much if we can even get that bill heard in the first committee.
You're correct. Absent a major earthquake, which could happen.
So May 14th, though, if you're in town, we'd love to have you come to that meeting. So I understand you've spoken at different school board meetings.
You've been to our school board meetings before.
Right.
That's right. Absolutely. And and if I can, I'd love to make it. I don't do my scheduling and because I'm too
we don't have it committed to memory. We don't expect
I'm a terrible scheduler. But you know, something else parents can do as well is they can go to the library, they can see what's there, they can write op-ed pieces. We defended a bus driver in Idaho who was fired for writing an op-ed piece and just simply said, this is what's in there. And really woke up the community. And also you can have students checking out these books and materials and keep them checked out. And, you know, sometimes that happens where kids just lose things. And, you know, that happens. Yeah. They may have to pay for the book and they may have to take the time maybe the next school year to order another one. But I know those things happen. You know, so anyway,
kids lose things
I think we can connect those dots probably. But if I was a parent to save the kids, there may be some books lost on my watch. But, you know, I'm just throwing that out.
Wish we could go into those classrooms and see what's in the teacher library. See what they're pushing.
Well, and what's interesting is you can set up an appointment. Parents can come on to school grounds, set up an appointment. To visit the teacher, just want to get to know the teacher. Those are things that you can do to really have a positive difference, to start relationships. I know people were demonstrating in front of a school once, and they were mobbed by students, you know, and these grandparents. And I told them, I said, you know what's even more effective? Why don't you volunteer to become a teacher's aide and be in the classroom and then be aware of what's going on, develop friendships, relationships, and be a little bit of an influence. When you see something, you might say, you know, if the parents found out about this, they may have a different perspective and be an influence. That's another opportunity I think we're missing sometimes.
Right. And last night, I know you were mentioning that on your website, is it pji.org?
That's right, pji.org.
You could go there for different resources to help parents.
Including a book, a free book called Reclaim Your School. And it's a very positive, proactive book for parents, teachers, students, school board members. And that's available. We update it regularly. It's free download. And great. We also have other resources, all without charge, on our website, pji.org.
That's great. That's great. Another thing they were talking about last night was the pro-life movement. I think you guys got into that. And Patty has some information about that that she wants to talk about.
Right. So as I was listening last night, you had alluded to, or you had spoke directly about a child being able to be aborted 28 days after being born.
Right.
So
it's an infanticide bill.
Right. So we had kind of looked into that, AB 2223 in the state of California.
Right.
So this is something to our knowledge, to the best of our knowledge, that was passed, that people voted for, people that represent us in California voted for some type of a bill that allows people to kill their children, essentially, after the child's born?
Correct. It has to be, quote unquote, pregnancy related, the reason. Now, what does that mean? It's very, very broad. It's very, very general. It could mean that the... It could be something like, okay, the baby's born without an arm. It could be that the baby's born as with Down syndrome. These are reasons why some parents, unfortunately, they may say, oh, we can't care for this, let's kill it. It could be because, you know, so of a birth defect, severe birth defect, but it's so broad. It could apply to the gender. You could say, hey, we were assured that this was going to be a girl and it's a boy. Kill it. You know, we thought that this baby, you know, let's say that the mother sees that the baby is from a different man and she's married, and they look at it and say, oh, shoot, this is obviously not from you, honey. Okay, I'll kill it. I mean, these are just hypotheticals. But unfortunately, the demented nature of our society today, being willing to kill a baby moments before that baby's about to be born with... He's thinking, you know, the little baby's thinking, breathing, or almost about to breathe, and thinking with feelings and pain, and then just killed without painkillers. We're already there. It's not unthinkable to see something like this implemented. You know, even the coroner in this legislation who examines the body of a dead person, the coroner is bound not to contest the death of a baby in this circumstance. Cannot contest, and if they do, they're punishable for I think up to 10 years behind bars and a $10,000 fine. So they're not going to say anything. And if the coroner is going to be bound like that, then how's this information going to get out? There's no way of challenging whether or not it was legitimately quote unquote pregnancy related. And even if so, right. It's so general and vague. I think it'd be very difficult to prosecute any murderer who engages in these kinds of hideous acts against such vulnerable and helpless as a newborn baby.
They're setting up a death squad.
Exactly.
For babies that aren't wanted, so to speak. But what's like the chain of command that they're supposed to go through to prove their case? Or is it just the mom saying, oh, I don't want it?
She just says it and the doctor does it.
No chain of command.
No chain of command. There's no review. There's no committee, no tribunal, nothing. There's nothing to protect that little baby from a sick mother. Now, mind you, people say, well, mothers would never do such a thing as that. Oh, really? In criminal law, you have cases where mothers have done terrible things and have killed their children. And what many people don't understand is that right after, and you ladies may know this better than I, but right after a woman has a baby, you know, in the TV shows, you know, in the 40s and 50s, she's smiling and she's just, and then you hear the angel music in the background, and yes, this is a wonderful treasure. And I'm just, in reality, what the studies show is that, no, actually what happens is women go through often a post-pregnancy depression. And it is can be very depressing. And they could be just crying and depressed. You combine that with any kind of a mental illness, chemical imbalance, bipolar, and these kinds of things could easily take place. But what it does is it devalues human life. So even let's just say, for the sake of argument, that no one ever did this. Just having this on the books devalues the sanctity and value of all human life, including the disabled, children with different ethnic backgrounds, gender, everything else. That is why it should be contested so much. There was a book and a movie called The Giver. It was about this bubble society, and it's supposed to be sort of this perfect society with this program set of values, and people only live to be so long, and then because they want it perfect. And one scene of it is about a doctor, and there's this little baby that was born, and the doctor is just systematically killing the baby, and just taking the, you know, killing the baby because that's the norm. And I thought, that would never happen. And then this legislation comes out, and this is exactly what we're approving in our society today in the state of California.
And they glorify it as, you know, this possibility not only can exist, but it would be beautiful. It's like, if somebody could think that years and years ago, you know, what's to stop somebody who's demented from picking up on this?
And running with it, I know. Yeah. The one thing I liked about the movie, though, was that at the end, the one person said, I'm not going to take the pills. I'm not going to take the programming. And their eyes were opened up, and they were able to escape outside the bubble. And
on a sled or something.
Yeah, on a sled, yeah. And I thought that was good because it reminded us, no matter how twisted and how demented things are, there's always hope. And when you have truth on your side, that hope will never extinguish.
Do you happen to know if this is happening in other states? Didn't something pass in New York? Maybe it was just the baby can be killed, like up to the day of birth, or.
Well, there are a number of states, blue states, do have partial birth abortion, unfortunately, like New York and California. That's where most of the baby is already out of the womb, is already born. Just the head is still inside. And in fact, the doctor twists the body so the head is still inside, to do the so they can crush the baby's skull with the rest of the baby out there with the hands, feet moving and everything. So it's really hideous. And that is part of the law. Interesting, Biden's appointment, a nomination appointment of the latest justice to the Supreme Court, you know, she is someone who actually argued in favor of partial birth abortion. She defended it in a court of law, and now she's sitting on the Supreme Court thanks to the Biden administration. I just see so much evil repeatedly coming from that White House. That appointment was despicable. And yet we could see appointments like that, depending again and again, depending on the outcome of the election this November. That's why people, they need to register, they need to vote. And just one quick point, we at Pacific Justice Institute will work with your church or synagogue to have a voter registration Sunday or Saturday at your church or synagogue. We already got over 500 churches last election to do voter registration Sundays. Mm-hmm. We're shooting for over 1,000. We have a whole division, a C4 division working on that. We'd love to assist anyone wanting us to help your church's voice be heard.
I love that. I was actually talking to Pastor Peter Moore.
Yes. Last night after, great guy.
After the meeting, and told him that for years I wanted to have a registration Sunday for the churches here in Bakersfield. And he was telling me that he has 12 churches already in Prince County that are doing that. They don't all do it at the same time, but he's coordinating part of that.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
So, so I'm anxious to get to work with him and get some more churches involved.
Yeah,
but getting back to AB 2223, now that it's law, what can we do? Is there anything we can do to gut it, repeal it?
Well, there could be a proposition on the ballot. You have to get a lot of signatures, and unless there's money, it's generally, there's only two times I can think where just volunteers got something on the ballot. That was Prop 13, and the other was Proposition 8. Right. So unless there's money behind it, it's very difficult to get on the ballot. The other way is to elect people to the state legislature and the governorship that have a level head on their shoulders and are reflective, truly, of the people of California. I don't believe most Californians, when asked, view in favor of being able to kill a baby up to 28 days after it's born for any
reason that's rationally related to somehow to how the baby turned out or something. I think most people in this state, even with all the pot we smoke, I think most people would say, no, not on my watch. That's terrible. By the way, and this is the state that voted at the, in a recent election to make it so that abortion is legal for any reason up till the instant the baby's born. The blood of the preborn is no longer can be blamed with the Supreme Court. It's on the hands of the voters of California. And, I can't help but think about how the culpability of the people of California has gone way up. And, I can second guess on what's going to happen next, but, I did get earthquake insurance. I did get earthquake insurance.
I do appreciate that you gave us the name of that bill, because I would say to other people, you know, there's these crazy things going on in New York and you can like kill a baby like up until the day that it's born. And they say, oh, Patty, come on.
Right.
That is not even happening.
They say, this is not an infanticide. No, that's a distortion. Oh, no, that's not what it is. So that's their jargon. But we investigated. We looked at the language. Our attorneys, who are very experienced, and we've looked at it. We examined the language. We assessed it. It is what I say it is, and the other side knows it, but they're trying to skirt it and deny it. And you know, lying is par for the course for them. Why shouldn't they lie? They don't believe there's anything above themselves holding them accountable. The ends justify the means, as far as they're concerned. That's what we're dealing with. But yeah,
I'm just curious to know how long it's been on the books and how come none of our Kern County legislators notified us so that we could do something about it. Express
well, there are. I will be, in all fairness to the legislators who are the good guys, those who are reflective of the people of California in a positive way. They are overwhelmed with so much dark legislation, evil legislation. Yeah. There is a reason we have our office in Sacramento, our first office, and that's because we do weigh in at the Civic Justice Institute on legislation. Now we have a full-time legislative counsel, actually in our office in Delaware, and she works with state legislators across the country to oppose bad bills and support good bills. And we have seen real results, like the Ten Commandments bill, school choice bill in Florida. We were behind that to make sure it applied to every family and not just a few in certain school districts. We worked hard to get six states to pass a law that would not let boys compete in girls' sports and go into girls' locker rooms while girls were naked. Those are exploding. Red states have taken that. The encouraging thing is that red states are passing great legislation. Some of the best laws for decades are now being passed in these red states. They're actually moving in a fantastic direction. The blue states are going in the opposite direction. Here's an example. So in response to red states passing legislation saying, yeah, you can't kill a preborn baby when there's a heartbeat. I mean, after all, heartbeats is what we look at to decide whether or not someone's alive or gone.
Viable.
Yeah. And it makes total sense.
Right.
So states like California, who love to kill babies, they are in New York on a witch hunt, and an actual witch hunt to badger pro-life clinics to get them so they can shut them down. We have the two largest pro-life clinics in the state. We at PJI stepped up and says, we will represent you against the state of California without charge. It's a huge commitment. We're willing to take it, and we're willing to do that anywhere among these blue states. Most of our offices, I think, they're actually in blue states or blue cities. We paratroop in where we're the most not wanted or the most challenged, because we want it to go head-to-head on the front line of the battle.
Is that these issues currently this lawsuit that you're engaged in?
Well, there's not a lawsuit yet because the state attorney general's office hasn't been found anything yet. But they're giving interrogatories, they're subpoenaing information. They're trying to find something somehow to justify a lawsuit to shut down the pro-life clinics.
Okay.
It just sort of reminds me, if I'm not mistaken, of courts on the East Coast. I think there's four of them, if I'm not mistaken. That are filing lawsuits simply for, keeping someone from running for office or becoming president. So We're seeing.
I think I've heard that.
Yeah, so we're seeing this grotesque abuse of our courts, attorney generals, district attorneys, and it. With the problem is it's causing people to have to second guess: do I want to open a business in a blue state, where they could find out that what I believe, that I go to church or I support conservative candidates, and they could turn on me, investigate, try to find a reason to sue me. And if they run for office in a state like that, you have to say, well, gee, the district attorney, I got to find out. Are they a radical leftist paid by Soros that's going to come after me if I decide to run for office and try to shut me down and come up with some reason to put me behind bars, some bogus reason like they did President Trump?
Yeah.
This is reality as we speak in Arizona. There's people who are alternative electors. That's not unusual. Back in, I think it was the 1876, it was a presidential election, and states in Florida and all these other states had alternative electors. Both sides were disputing the electoral votes, disputing the outcome of the election. No one was prosecuted because they had an alternative slate of electors. The election wasn't over. I mean, the voting was over, but there was still looking at, okay, who really won Florida, who really won these other states, or three of them. And yet it happens now, modern day, and we're going to try to prosecute the opposition, put them behind bars to keep them from being able to be elected president of the United States. It is disgraceful, and we at Pacific Justice are willing to stand by the pro-life clinics from this kind of tyrannical, outrageous prosecution and abuse of justice and authority by the state government of California, starting from the governor on down.
Can we circle back to body dysphoria and transgenderism? I, like, you know, every other woman in America, I belong to, you know, maybe a couple of different organizations. And what I'm seeing in these organizations that are created by women and for women is that we're having to do rewrites of our bylaws because of, you know, the question, do we put into our bylaws what is a female and what is a male? And our organizations are for females. And how do we best protect ourselves with that?
Right. That's a really good question. It's a question you should not have to ask. You know, what is a woman? If you were to ask that 20, 30, 40 years ago, people would laugh and say, what's the punchline? You know, it's that. Why would that be a legal question? Why would pronouns ever be a controversy? I mean, so that's where we are. I would say we at Pacific Justice too, we recommend organizations that are gender related definitely need to have a language spelling out how they define their membership, how they define the gender that they're using, the term women, woman. What does that mean? They need to define that. This is, you know, and we have language like that. It's the safest to go back to a biological, the DNA. Do you have an XX or XY chromosome? And that's pretty clear cut. Now, there's rare occasions you'll have a double XY. That's a very rare birth defect. And I'm, you know, if you have someone with a double XY, you can, that's, you can deal with that. We'll help you with that. Or you can have someone with a partial adrenal insensitivity syndrome. And that's where it's a male, but the male development doesn't happen, or happens partially. It's the male is never a female, has no female organs. It's just the male organs don't develop fully. And that person is still a male. Every cell in their body is unanimous what their yeah. gender is. And those are also extremely rare. But we're talking today as people with mental issues trying to resolve it by permanently sterilizing themselves, cutting off body parts, hormones that are medically very problematic. And medicine is showing this is just not a sweet little alternative. This will impact their lifespan. It'll cause depression issues. It'll also cause rage issues when you're dealing with females with testosterone. God made the male brain to be compartmentalized and, at least theoretically, practically, to be able to have restraint with regards to the high testosterone, which can be very dangerous if you're not able to control it. When the woman's brain does not have the white matter, it has a higher gray matter, which is fantastic for perception, functionality, multitask, but you inject that with 10 times the testosterone, which men have, and then you're bringing in something that the female brain doesn't have fully the ability to deal with practically. And we've seen some terrible, horrific shootings that I think are the direct result of that, from females who have taken large amounts of testosterone to quote unquote change, but in reality distort their gender. We shouldn't even use the word transgender in a way, because it implies that people can change their gender. They can't. They can distort their gender, but they cannot change the DNA in every single cell in their body, which is unanimous of what their gender is. And the ramifications with depression, suicide, the stats are all there. It is not beneficial for someone to go down this path. It's very horrific, and the regrets are massive. Out there are people who wish they hadn't gone down that path that they were encouraged to do, courtesy of many government public schools and public school teachers.
So if Pacific Justice Institute would recommend that these female organizations or male organizations have verbiage in their bylaws that state what is a woman or what is a man, depending upon the organization. Do you have knowledge of prior cases of things similar to this that have either worked or not worked? And what are you basing that recommendation
on? Yeah, well, this is a new area of law. So you can't quote something that in the case of 1862, this is the court held. This wasn't even on the radar our thinking was not that degraded, if you will. So this is new, but that said, we can look at it very rationally and look at the good projected outcome and probable interpretation of the language. But it's very, very limited at this point. So we work on it, and we try to go through hypotheticals and possibilities. That's real important when you're putting together that kind of language, is to, what are the possibilities? What are the how could this be used or twisted? And so we're willing to do that. We're willing to help organizations. We also encourage organizations that can, many of our public service organizations, but in reality, they have a religious function or religious dimension. And if that's the case, we're encouraging them to seriously consider reincorporating as a religious organization. And some of them, if they're a national in scope, might want to also actually incorporate in a red state instead of a blue state. There's reasons for that that my chief counsel, Kevin Snyder, would be better at explaining. But that's for a national kind of an organization that would have that ability to do that.
Wasn't there a sorority that was in the news that, or maybe two sororities, one had not put a definition of a woman in, and the other sorority did the definition of a woman.
Right.
And what happened with those two?
My understanding, and I'm sort of flat-footed here, and I'm trying to, remember. My understanding is the one that did not have the definition got in trouble. We're not able to defend it. The one that did have the clear definition was protected. At the very least, if you have the definition, you have a starting point of defense. Mm-hmm. If you do not have a definition and you have a state law with a different definition saying it's just whatever you want, it's whatever you think you are, that's who you are, and that's what what everyone has to respect, that kind of a language, it can be very problematic. It's best if you have it clearly defined, number one. And number two, if it's a religious or faith-based organization in any way, shape, or form, we encourage people to, organization like that, to ideally reincorporate as a religious organization, and also to include language in their bylaws that we recommend for institutions as well as churches without charge on our website, pji.org. And if people like to keep up with our cases, they'd like to download our resources like 12 Steps to Protect Your Children from CPS from Being Taken by Social Workers. Every family in America should have that. Thousands of kids are being taken from great families because the families are not encouraging things that violate their conscience, like encouraging transgender or something like that. Parents, if they have this, they're going to be very well equipped. Without it, they're playing with fire, especially in states like California. And they can go once again to get that and all our resources, and decide to get our e-newsletter
for free at pji.org, P for Civic, J for Justice, I for Institute.org, or they can also just text the letters PJI to the number 71541. I remember it as a 71-year-old man having lunch with a 54-year-old woman, and there's a 1-year-old in the high chair. So
it's not theirs.
I don't know. It just makes it stand out in my mind. So 71541. And just text PJI to that, and that's a great way to start. And we can help you and be a great resource to help you, your community, all without charge.
Right. I do want to bring one more thing up with you, if I could.
Sure.
When you're talking about there is no precedence for all the stuff that you're dealing with right now, folks, and they voted almost unanimously to have LGBTQ ministers.
Right.
To say that was okay.
And also when you say LGBTQ, I want to clarify a little bit on the story. It's not just people who say, we have this temptation or this is sort of our orientation. No, these are people engaging in the acts,
yes,
which is an abomination, which is sin, just like other sin, like adultery, fornication. It is openly giving into the temptation of these sex acts, which God's word says very clearly is wrong and is sinful. And it'd be like, say, a pastor who say he was committing adultery, shacking up with a woman outside of marriage. That is what the First United Methodist Church has decided. And it wasn't close.
No.
It was like 650 to 50.
Yeah.
So this is a sick, depraved, blasphemous, heretical denomination.
Right.
The First United Methodist. And I encourage people out there, if you're a pastor and you're part of that denomination, please contact us. We are standing by to give counsel to churches who do not want to be a part of something so heretical and clearly is now devoid of the Christian foundation and the Christian faith. Otherwise, I'm sure they're great people.
Yeah.
You can't say you believe in Jesus and have that position because Jesus recognized the authority of Scripture.
Right.
That was clear. The Apostle Paul was very clear on this. So you have to say, no, we reject Jesus. We reject the teachings and writings of the apostles. And yet we're still going to try to call ourselves a Christian. It doesn't work. The Episcopals did that. And we now have the Anglican Church who broke away from them. Anglican Church sticking to the Bible and their traditions. The same thing with the Methodist Church. We're going to see that happening. And people need to decide, are they going to church to please people and to socialize? Are they going to church out of a degree of faith and their personal relationship with the Lord? And if that's the case, choose this day who you will serve. And that includes where you choose to worship and choose a church that's teaching from the word. If you're Lutheran, Missouri Synod, Wisconsin Synod, stick to the Bible. Presbyterian, you have PCA Presbyterian or Orthodox Presbyterian. PCUSA has gone off the ranch as well. If you're Methodist, Wesleyan Methodist, or other kind of conservatives, not First United. It's splitting right down the middle between truth and non-truth. And when I do a lot of guest preaching at churches, and out of 2 Timothy chapter 3, it makes it very clear, this is a sign of the times. The church is splitting and giving into what tickles the ear. Make no mistake, we need to be on the right side, and the right side is God's side that respects the word and the teachings of Christ. You have and you have those that are against the word of God and against the fundamentals of Christian faith.
And the secular world is just going to eat that up. They're going to say they can't, you know, like they attack the Republicans for not being able to agree on things. Now they're going to say the church can't even agree.
Well, exactly. And I will say one thing to note is that those churches that have gone abominable and heretical to the word of God and the teachings of Christ and the apostles, they're not growing. They're shrinking. God's not moving. Those are dying, and those churches are choosing this day who they will serve and to follow the Lord. Those are the churches that are growing, and we're seeing exciting things happening. We at Pacific Justice Institute are privileged to be serving those churches and religious organizations all without charge across the country. It's a joy.
That's wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
very much. Pacific Justice Institute. The website is pji.org.
Thank you.